The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike. Each day, it's my incredible pleasure to be here and to be able to talk with people from our area, be they newsmakers, pastors, people who are making a difference for the name of Jesus and his gospel. I have on the line today a friend I met a couple of years back. I heard about him, I should say, a couple of years back. I actually met him face-to-face last year for the first time, and that is Audley McLean. You hear him on the stations that we have in Gainesville and Ocala. He has a daily five-minute program called Words of Inspiration, and he has quite a story to tell. So I'd like to say an official Afternoons with Mike welcome to Audley McLean. Thanks for being with me.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Mike. Thank you.
Well, you know, when I first met you, I could tell that you had an accent that I wasn't quite sure where that might have emanated from. But you are not from the United States originally. Tell us your background.
Well, I was born in Kingston, Jamaica, and I lived there until I was 20. And I went away to Bible College in Toronto and Chicago, went back home to Jamaica, determined, having been called of God, I knew, back in 1955. Now, these are dates that will make you wonder, well, how old is this guy? But anyway, the year I graduated from Emmaus Bible College in Oak Park, Illinois, I distinctly heard the Lord's call. We can talk about that if you want.
Absolutely, I want to talk about that. You know, you mentioned your age. Go ahead and share, if you will, because I would never have guessed it.
You would have thought a lot more, right?
No, I would have thought a lot less.
1931.
You were born in 31. All right, so people, do the math, and you'll realize that this man is 89 years old. Have you had your 89th birthday yet?
No, it's in November.
In November. Okay, you're 88, almost 89. That's close enough, man. Wow, boy, that is amazing. I would never have guessed that because I met Audley face-to-face, and he gave me a bottle of his famous wing sauce. It's a hot sauce, and we're going to have to talk about that because you are a bit of an inventor with that stuff as well, right?
Oh, I suppose so, yeah. My original was the Jamaican gourmet hot sauce itself, which is, you're talking about the one that you have, that's softened down. The original sauce is a little bit more pungent, quite a bit more pungent, actually. And it was I liked to cook, and I liked to play around with mixes. And so I started doing, when I was in Buffalo in ministry there and also working as a vice president of the bank, I had taken meals, you know, once in a while, and people liked what I did. And one day someone said, you ought to market this stuff, you know. So that was the beginning of that. And so we made a foray into the world of cuisine.
And it's good, too, let me tell you. It's really good. In fact, our general manager, Dave Cobb, up in his office is in the Gainesville station, and he is a lover of hot sauces. And at our dinners and lunches, he's always bringing some new recipe that he's trying out. And whether
my
it's
kind of man,
yeah, you're kind of guy. That's exactly right.
I'll tell you what, if I will send to you one of the original, or a couple of the originals, you can share with him.
All right. He will love it. He will love it. He really does. He likes those hot pickles, pickles that are on fire, man. You bite into one of those things and it's it's good stuff. It will light you up. Tell us a little bit about how and why and what was the story from getting from Kingston, Jamaica, to the United States. How did that happen?
Okay, well, I felt the call of God back in May of 1955. I went back home after that, and so long, lots of in-betweens. But the highlights are that I worked and preached and developed a sort of an evangelistic ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And a distinct leaning towards youth. But then I met a friend from the Bahamas who had been working in Savannah, Georgia, and another one, Jamaican, who was working in Philadelphia. Mike Flowers and Sam Hart, both gone to be with the Lord now.
Mm-hmm.
And they provoked within me a desire to respond to a need that they saw in the United States with regard to the black community.
Mm.
Both of them are people of color, like I am. And I must modify that, because I think there was a sense that our group, our little brand of Christianity, if you would, I came from a group called the Plymouth Brethren. I'm not sure if you've heard of them.
Mm-hmm, I have.
Yes, and so a rather quiet, semi-exclusive group, but there was nothing happening in the black communities within that group of believers. There was, at that time, back in the 60s, the church, unfortunately, was still a segregated place.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, Sunday morning, somebody said, was the most segregated hour in the United States.
And yes.
It may still be so. It's far less so than it was 50 years ago, mind you.
That is for sure.
But so that was the motivation. And then I was invited to come on a year's preaching tour throughout the States and Canada, and saw in Buffalo, New York, a local brother attempting to launch a ministry in the city. It was on a storefront church, and I just fell in love with the whole idea. He was working at the Ford plant and not giving all he... And we talked about the possibility of my coming back and helping to launch it. And so I got back and spent 6 weeks in the summer of 61, I think it was, and they purchased an old Lutheran church building. You know what happens in the inner city, what happened in those days, that a significant church or denomination whose congregation shrank because they were not reaching out to the community, white churches left, and so black churches would move in and buy the old buildings. It happened in my own case as well.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, after 3 years, I just felt the call to stay. I was offered a pastorship in Georgia, rather in South Carolina, in Beaufort, South Carolina, and that's certainly a lot more like Jamaica than Buffalo, New York.
Yes. Yeah, you never had the kind of snow in Jamaica that you saw in Buffalo.
No, we've never had snow.
Yeah.
The average temperature is about 80 degrees.
Yes.
80 degrees.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I spent 35 years shoveling snow because I was just pulled by the city, and we got the Lord blessed. We were able to, first thing we were able to see accomplished under God was a black and white church working together for what they said was the first time in the history of the city. When I proposed that we invite an evangelist friend of mine, I don't know if you heard the name of Tom Skinner. Tom is now gone to be with the Lord.
I've heard
Tom
that name, but I can't remember from where.
Well, he was a Harlem gang leader, the son of a Baptist
that's it. Yes.
Minister. He was our gang leader. And through the ministry of radio, I'm glad to say, one night when they were planning a rumble, he turned the radio on and looking for rock and roll music and happened upon some preacher preaching the gospel.
Mm.
He doesn't know the man's name, and to this day, I'm sure the man doesn't know who he was. And that's why I am sold on radio.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to see the results. God will do that. So we thought of inviting Tom, and they said, it will never work, Godly. We just have never had that done. But by the grace of God, we got one Baptist pastor, two Baptist pastors, one Presbyterian, and one Congregationalist. That was our nucleus, and thus started the movement.
Mm.
And we were able to bring Tom to Buffalo, and we rented the largest auditorium that was available, the Kleinhans Music Hall. It held 3,500 people. And the thing that couldn't happen filled the room for every night of the 2 weeks, at the end of which we were asked to extend it.
Ah.
So for 3 weeks, Tom's going to preach the gospel to a mixed congregation. And that was the beginning of things.
Oh, my goodness.
And
3,500 people every night.
Every night. And it was overtime. And the Lord touched hearts. Not only people were saved, but one Presbyterian minister, Dr. Kick, was really moved. And he went back and preached to his congregation. And one of his people was moved by his message about the call of the city, was his sermon.
Mm-hmm.
And he offered a building he owned in the heart of the so-called ghetto,
mm-hmm.
where was a public housing complex. And now he said, occupy. Now, at that time, I was beginning to launch a church gathering out of a Bible study. I was sales manager of New York Life. So I couldn't take anything else on. So we prayed about this. And a friend introduced me to a brother in Niagara Falls, which is about 25 miles from where we were.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been attempting to start a church. He had gotten saved late in life, was a postal worker who had retired. And we approached Art Billups, and he said, I'll come and check it out. To make a long story short, he just came down. They decided to move to Buffalo, and he threw himself into the city and began to minister from that building. But it turned out to be inadequate. In the housing complex just next to that was a large housing complex, which was really going down. He went to the city hall, and they gave him a free apartment and for which he worked with kids. And we had these same suburban churches who were couldn'ts were now volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd come down after school classes. Just an amazing work got going. And so was launched what was called the Ellicott Center, which led into Urban Christian Ministries, which we started in 1970.
Mm.
What it turned out back in the mid-70s that Art's health wouldn't permit him to continue, and the doctor said he needed a warmer climate. Now we're faced with a challenge finding somebody else. And the board asked me, how about you? And of course, here am I, making a good salary, carrying on my work, but I felt, you're going to have to trust God and, mm-hmm. and do this. And we launched what we called Urban Christian Ministries, and God just blessed us. The same volunteers came into a slightly different section where my church by now was launched, another white church that left the city. We bought the First Baptist Church building in downtown Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
That all by itself is a miracle, what God did. And so we developed this ministry, and then we decided we wanted a place that we could have offices. And a Presbyterian minister, one of the great inventors, an old elderly gentleman, Wilson Greatbatch, who was the man who developed the modern heart pacemaker,
mm.
had a large building on the main street. One of his tenants was a post office, and he said, look, I'll let you guys use as much of the space as you need without rent. And so we moved into that. And I was, in the meantime, through a Mennonite brother, introduced to the superintendent of prisons for the Erie county area, and we started a Bible study in there, working with the ex-offenders. A printer in town, man who had print shops. Back then, everybody didn't have a computer and copier, so print shops were in good business. And Joe Farage left his business, didn't give up his business, he put it in the hands of other people, and came and launched our print shop for ex-offenders. We had a training, and we opened next to it a thrift shop. And the Lord just multiplied his blessings. Urban Christian Ministries will be celebrating their 50th anniversary next month.
Wow. Still going on.
It's still going on, and God is blessing. And so that's kind of how my 35 years in Buffalo went. But I want to say something that's very, very important for any worker for God, any minister, man or woman listening in. I hit a roadblock. I hit a bump. I hit a chasm in the middle of my ministry. And my testimony was tainted, and my life was thrown down.
Mm.
And I felt, my boy said, "Oh, take 6 months off," but I felt I was finished.
Mm.
I couldn't. And so I resigned, and they told me to get my replacement, and I found brother came up from Louisiana and took over. And I kind of remained on the side, on the edges, at the shorelines, not in the deep waters where God had called me to be, and remained on the sideline for a number of years. So, I'd get the speaking engagement, I'd do this, I'd do that. But I'd given up my radio ministry, and I moved to Florida in 2000. And, you know, I'm a member of a church, an elder, and I'm a preacher here. But it wasn't the same. God had said there's more. When I told you about that date in 1955, the Lord brought to my heart, my mind, John 15:16, you have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit and that your fruit should remain. And that choked at my heart. Am I not bearing any fruit? Am I just on the shorelines? But I swallowed it, and I tried to push it away. And I said, I'm getting old. I'll go. I want to be with the Lord. And then it was back in 2009, right here in Ocala. I can't tell you, Michael, I heard some magic voice. But the Lord spoke into my heart from what he wrote to the children of Israel through Joel. I will restore to you the years that the locust hath eaten, the cankerworm and the caterpillar and the palmer worm, my great army, which I sent among you. And I began to argue with the Lord. I don't know if you've ever done that, but I began to say, Lord, no, I'm 77 years old. I can't. And as you and I are speaking, it seemed as though God was saying to me, have you heard about a guy named Moses? And almost in step fashion, and have you heard about a guy named Caleb and one named Abram? And it was like an intense battle. And I breathed a sigh of relief, and I said, in effect, Lord, you win. I'll be what you want me to be. And that was when I restarted my radio ministry and had no idea where I was going to go with it. I local Christian radio station. But I had no... My local church, I hadn't invited them to be a part of it. And then one day I met Danny Thomas. Had no idea who he was. Didn't have any idea that any mission headquarters were in Ocala. And after lunch and a conversation, I asked whether he would be part of a board that I was forming. And then he told me what they did. And Harvest International is a caring ministry cares for. It functions for the business activity of missionaries in about 12 different countries. And so they took me under their wings. And I became the voice of Harvest International, a ministry that reaches into Haiti and into India and Zimbabwe. And its mission is actually to do all the work that missionaries need to do. Take care of their income, take care of the distribution of their funds, and so on. It doesn't itself have money, but it acts as a conduit for the ministry and the missionaries. And they go on mission trips. Of course, nobody's going anywhere this year, obviously.
Yes. COVID is taking care of that.
Yes. I don't know if I took too long to answer that question, but those are the realities of the system as it has come up.
I think it's amazing that you said at age 77, your involvement with Harvest and this whole new thing that you're doing began at age 77. I would find that to be incredibly encouraging, even at my age. I'm younger than that, but I'm 67. And to realize that God is not done, and you're right, it is the Lord that calls, it's the Lord who chooses, and it's the Lord who sustains, and he's obviously sustained you for a work yet to come, Audley. And I really appreciate you, man. I really do. Your words of inspiration that come on following my program at 2:55 in Ocala and in Gainesville are always full and meaty, and I enjoy not only the things you have to say, but the way you say it. And it's a blessing to my own heart. What an interesting person you are, and I'm grateful for you. My guest today is Audley McLean. We're going to be back with Audley coming up in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, right here on The Shepherd. I'm on the line today with Audley McLean. That voice, if you're in Gainesville, Ocala, you've heard that voice on The Shepherd. And he is 88, soon to be 89 years old. A happy birthday in advance for you. I know
Thank you, Mike.
It must be something in that hot sauce that you make that is keeping you spry and active. But I would never have believed that you are that of that age, and you're doing a great job. You know, one of the things that in the break we were talking about is your heart to pass along not only what God has said to you, but what God is wanting to do through you to other people. We know that discipleship is something that is so critical, and mentoring men is the way that a lot of people in this day and age would refer to what is basically biblical discipleship, where a person is really caring for and pouring their own life, like what Paul did to Timothy. And that's what you did in a Buffalo with a couple of people. Why don't you share about those men and at this stage of your life what you're seeing happen?
Oh, that's such a thrill. And I trust this encourages somebody in ministry that it's worth it, whatever it is that you're giving into the lives. The two men of whom I spoke, they're just two of many. I met one when he was actually 8 years old, when I just got to Buffalo and started working with young people. Would take them out on a Friday night to a basketball court and Bible study. I never didn't even know how to hold a basketball. I grew up in a British culture and the Caribbean where our games were soccer and cricket. And but I knew that somebody would play basketball in the team. So one of the guys, I made him the lead of the group, and I'd take care of the spiritual part. And Tommy was just 8 years old when I met him. His older brother is the one who led the basketball, but he grew in the Lord. Now, Tommy is over 60 now, and he became a success. He became my assistant in the Urban Christian Ministries work, graduated from college, went to work for the IRS and was moving well along. Then he felt the call of God, and I was so thrilled. And he is now a pastor, a youth pastor, as well as the head of a mentoring, a national mentoring program. And I thought, thank God, the things that you've heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to others who should be able to teach others also. So I'm living to see that, and I give God thanks.
Mm.
The other man of whom I spoke is Gene Copeland. And both of these men have come down to Ocala to be speakers at my annual fundraiser in October, which, of course, this October is going to go the COVID way. But Gene, who I pursued for about 9 months, he was working for a quasi-government organization, but I just felt God could use this man in ministry. So I persuaded the man. I didn't persuade him. I remained the instrument that God used to persuade him to give up his paying job, foolishly, and join me in my mad career of depending on God to supply our needs.
That's so, not such a bad place to be.
You know, and then I took Gene to the prison where we were having a study, and he began to like that ministry. And until today, he's still doing that. But in addition, he has added an amazing component to his ministry. He goes into the high schools that are failing and offers them a seminar with their students, an ongoing thing. It's his project lead. It's something about learning, earning, and esteem, some such acronym. But he talks about how these students can succeed. And in each instance, the president and the superintendent of schools have now told him they've seen amazing turnarounds in the lives of students who once were considered failures.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene's 5-minute talks are going to be aired on my program beginning next week.
Ah.
We'll hear some of Gene. So I invite people to listen in for what he does as part of his life work.
Mm.
And of course, there are those who are carrying on. His brother, William, is now the president of Urban Christian Ministries in Buffalo. And we still have at least two of the volunteers who have been at this for 50 years and not quit.
Mm.
So there are wonderful stories of reproduction of life. And you mentioned that that's literally the heart of ministry, discipleship, catching the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand we're in Generation Z now. I don't even know what it means. But and I can no longer talk the language. And so I must, in fact, find out younger people who can translate what we do into today's language. And I hope that on the radio, whatever I share is caught by some others somewhere. And I want to say this to you, Mike. We're so blessed to have Harvest International because our programs are on their website.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an interesting thing that developed. I have a pastor in Detroit who called up to say they caught the program and they're wondering whether we could start it up in their area. They have a person who will take the programs and reproduce them in the area. Then I had a call from New York City since the COVID thing started. And a pastor has asked me to take some of his Wednesday night meetings by phone. So I've preached to them twice already. And there's one up in Minneapolis. Somebody gave him a card about our ministry. He caught it on the Harvest International program. And then, guess what? We're now in Indianapolis in another Christian network like yours. And hopefully we'll be able to get into your connection in Orlando soon.
Well, you're on Orlando today, so that's good.
Yes, right. Yeah, let's hope we can continue it. Let's just pray that the Lord opens the doors for us to be able to take advantage of that extended ministry there.
When you look back over this many years, and I think it's really difficult. You were talking about younger people and the language that is spoken by younger people. And one thing that is spoken across all generations is God's faithfulness. When you look back, oddly, Amen. God's faithfulness over all of these years, when you think of all of those years you spent in Buffalo, a guy from Jamaica transplanting to Buffalo with a heart for urban ministry, and the Lord has opened you up to that. When you look back over all of that, I know you said there was a period of rough patch in the middle there. We understand that. When you look back to those early years, what do you think would have been, in your mind, one of the most amazing things that God did for you way back when?
Well, you know, I have to go back to the time when He saved me. Really, that's the most amazing thing. But I was 15 years old. Let me just give you a little bit about where I'm coming from, Mike. I left school. I was 13 years old, 2 weeks after my 13th birthday. This was the same month we had the Battle of the Bulge. So that's historical.
Yes.
And I had completed the elementary school in Jamaica. I'd skipped a few classes, and so I was with a class of young people who were 16 years old. And I had my first negotiating battle with my parents. I said, I can get a Christmas job to wrap parcels in the local department store downtown and then go back to school. And of course, the elementary system in Jamaica takes you into what might be the first year of junior high in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd done that, and I had nothing else to do. But it was also the time World War was ending. The United States had gone through this. I grew up in what was the Depression years of
yes.
the USA. And if it was Depression here, it was double Depression in places like the Caribbean, the so-called third world countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with my mom and stepfather. They started having more children, and by this time, there were three new members of the family. And I could feel the financial stress and pain. And I think I had a mind a little bit beyond my age. So when January came to go back to school, I had my second negotiating battle with my parents. So listen, I'll go to night school. And I got a scholarship to the Kingston Technical Night School and began there. But together with working with older people in the daytime and meeting with old people at nighttime, I began to veer towards people way beyond my age.
Mm-hmm.
And not Christians, things they did. And my parents weren't believers, so I had no real push to go, although my mother did send me to Sunday school. And after I got into that clique at age 14 and so on, I found other things I thought were better. So I left home for Sunday school, but took off with my guys. And my life was becoming a real street urchin until I got home. And then in 1947, the Big Tent Crusade was scheduled. And of course, my boys and I decided, you know, that doesn't belong in our community. And we planned to burn it down.
Mm.
During which time, I noticed my mother was gone. I come home from work, get ready to go to school. So I wasn't really much in the house. But she was missing at supper time for about 2-3 weeks. And then she said to me, Audie, I want you to come to hear this. Harold Wildish was an English evangelist, the best preacher I've ever heard, frankly. But I said, no, I can't go, because I knew the boys were around. I couldn't stand being seen there and the consequences of betraying them. But then she laid the law down and made it clear that I couldn't live there if I didn't go. So I went. And you know, the very first night I went, the Lord brought me under such great conviction.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I didn't trust the Lord. I ran out of the church, the tent building, tent coverings, and the next, I was miserable all week, miserable. And the next Sunday, to her happy surprise, I got dressed. I'm coming. And that night, on January the 26th, 1947, the Lord caught a boy on his way down and brought me into his great, great salvation. And thus began a romance with God. It wasn't easy, because my friends told me, I give you 2 weeks, I give you 3 months, I give you 6 months, and then they stopped counting.
Yep.
Well, that was 73 years ago.
Well, I think you proved that it was the real deal 73 years ago. And glad you didn't burn that place down, too.
Oh, God, yes. I'll probably be telling a story from another place.
Oh, my goodness. My guest today is Audley McLean. In a moment, he's going to tell us about his famous hot sauce and how he came from all of that to what he's doing now. I love this guy. You're going to love this story as well. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're listening to The Shepherd. I'm on the line today with Audley McLean. Audley has a radio ministry now with Harvest International, and you are based in Ocala. You moved down there from the New York area, and you've been down there, you said, around the year 2000, I think it was, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Exactly. 20 years next month.
And Ocala is such a gorgeous area. A lot of a lot different than Buffalo, New York, though. I'm sure.
Oh yes, horse country. I love it.
Yes, indeed. It's most like the Kentucky area. My folks, my wife's folks, live in the bluegrass state of Kentucky around Shelbyville, and so many beautiful horse farms around there. Ocala reminds me so much of that. And and being a horse lover myself, I've always enjoyed that aspect anyway. My grandfather was a person who had property, and he leased out a barn to some people who had ponies. So I grew up with caring for ponies and around horses and loved it all. My goodness, that was a lot of fun. Now, I mentioned this at the end of the break. I want you to tell a quick story. What drew you into making hot sauce?
Well, let me, it's just a passion I had to, when I was in college, let me start there. I took a summer job in the Catskill Mountains in New York at what was called the Jewish Alps, literally. And it was a camp for Jewish boys. The wealthy people in New York would get rid of them for 8 weeks up in these mountains. And I went up, summer job, dishwasher, whatever they had to offer me. And after being there for 3 weeks, the second chef went away for the weekend, got drunk, didn't come back on time. And the owner, old Jewish gentleman, Mr. Wallace, said, he called me Mac. Mac, you help the chef. So I helped the chef, and he was a great Puerto Rican chef, I mean, super chef. And I kind of liked what I was doing for a while there. And so I became the second chef. and I got exposed to flavorings and tastes and so on, although it was a kosher kitchen, but still good food. And I developed this interest because I never had cooked in Jamaica or anything. Men didn't cook back then. So next year I went back and he said, you've got the job. And I was the official second chef.
You're the sous chef.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy. Now, do you ever watch any of the TV shows now about baking and these chefs?
Yeah, I watch some of them sometimes, yeah. I like to watch Emerald.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because my cooking desire. I realized I had a built-in passion for blending. In so much of that, my wife and I would have gone out to dinner at some restaurant or somebody's house, and there would be a sauce that was served, and I would attempt to identify the ingredients based on my taste buds.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Yes, and one time I did one of these aptitude tests. In fact, it happened when I was in Bible college, and I don't know how these things work, but they're fairly accurate because they came up with the two diverse potentials for me. One was communications career, and two, culinary career. And I thought, what do these have in common? How do they come up with that?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they said. But anyway, when I started doing this, I had a certain taste for a hot, sweetie sauce. And so I began. My first ingredient was going to be the Jamaican allspice and the Jamaican Scotch bonnet pepper. Very hot, marvelous aroma. And the allspice, my grandparents had pimento trees, is what we call them in Jamaica. And I grew up watching them dry the allspice or the pimento plant. And so those two things came together. And then the tamarind was going to provide the sweetie sour flavor. That didn't happen. I couldn't afford to get tamarind. It was too difficult to get by. So I selected a number of fruits, which I won't talk about on the air because you got to pay for that.
That's right.
It worked. And in so much that, you know, I would share it with my friends. And one of the clerks in the office where I was working at the bank while I was in the ministry said, "You've got to market this thing." So I said, "Well, let me give it a try." So that's what I did. And it was on the market in the Buffalo area and over in Ohio. We were doing quite well until I came here, and then I kind of just pushed it aside.
Hmm.
But then the Lord said, I didn't call you for that. So I hung it up, but it's still there.
That's the
dawn of the Jamaican gourmet. And one of the members of the family said, "Why don't you just call it a Jamaican gourmet and put your mug on the picture, on the label?" So we did that.
That's what you did. And so you still have some, right?
Yes, we still have some. It's being manufactured by a third party, and they have a part of the recipe, and my spice blender in California has the other part. So
That's good stuff. In our time remaining, I want to spend some time with you talking about when you look back over your life, and this is something that I believe that one of the benefits of being older is that we look back, and we mentioned it kind of in talking about faithfulness. When you look back at God's faithfulness, the ways that He has provided for you, I am sure, oddly, that you have story upon story of how God has provided. When there didn't seem to be a way, He made a way.
Exactly. It's so very true. Mike, when I started out in ministry, we kind of took off. I mentioned I was with the Brethren, Plymouth Brethren, and they didn't believe in paying a salary to a full-time worker, as we were known. They didn't ordain you. They commended you to the work, much like you find in the New Testament. I'll say this, they're Biblicists, and I thank God I was saved in that atmosphere. But there were certain extremes that I now question. But one of them was that you feel called of God to go into the world, just go. You can let the saints know you're doing it. And so in July of 1965, when my wife, my five-year-old daughter, and I felt the call to go to Buffalo to help with the ministry there, I had no money in the bank left, and we had to book by faith. In July, we booked our flights and waited up on God. And that was the beginning of a scenario that would repeat itself over the years under different circumstances. But God provided. And here am I. I'm still here. After all these years, and there were times when it seemed as though there's no way, and then God just stepped in, using people, some of whom I never even knew. Let me give you an indication of how God works. Before I came to Buffalo or went to Buffalo, while I was still in the ministry in Kingston, Jamaica, I'd been interested in and attracted to the ministry of Roy Campbell, who had gone from Jamaica to the land of British Honduras, now called Belize.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I'd love to see what, because I was impressed in what he had accomplished. He built a school. He was a young Jewish accountant who came to the Lord, and he gave it all up and trusted God for his support. So I wanted to go there just to see what he was doing, but I didn't have any connection. And I remember, just as I explained to you about the day the Lord spoke to him in the morning here about the years of the cankerworm, back then I said, Lord, I would love to see the work in Belize. And I left it there. Had no connection, didn't even tell my wife. About 2.5 weeks later, I got an air letter. It used to be little blue things that you could mail overseas more cheaply. It came from Belize.
Hmm.
I thought, what is open the thing? I had an invitation to come to a youth crusade for 3 weeks in Belize.
Wow.
I said, Lord, this is impossible. And I shared it with my wife. And so, to make a long story short, I wound up there.
Wow.
And we had a glorious time. It was a youth crusade. And so I had to ask them, I said, tell me, why did you pick my name? And they said, there was a missionary here who mentioned you and what you were doing. And we were praying about 3 weeks ago. I mean, 3 weeks before we called you. So I tried to nail them down. So do you have a note of the day you were praying? And yet they had it. Would you believe it was the same day that I was on my knees in Harborview in Kingston,
mm-hmm.
asking God to send open a way?
I do believe it. That is our God. He is faithful.
Yep. Well, 40 years later, I'm on a cruise and stop in Belize, and I asked, I got ashore to go for a shore ride, got a taxi cab, and I said, do you know such and such a school? He said, yes, sir, I went there. I said, would you take me there so I could just see what's happening? Well, it was the summertime, so the school was on summer break, but the office was open. The administrator came out, and I'm introducing myself. She says, Mr. McLean, I know you. You were here 40 years ago, and I was a teenager, and I surrendered my life to the Lord.
Oh, what a great story, Audley. Oh my goodness.
Don't mess with God. He's able to do exceeding abundantly above.
Oh.
And that's what I'm proving this in my old age now. God continues to do that. I give him glory.
Well, I am thankful for you, and I can't tell you how much fun I have had talking with you today. Audley McLean from Ocala Harvest Ministries. The radio program is on every afternoon at 2:55 in the Gainesville, Ocala area, and it's on WTMN and WRZN at that time, called Words of Inspiration. Thank you for being with me today, Audley.
Thank you for the privilege. I enjoy talking with you. May the Lord continue to bless what you do.
Thank you. That's about all my time for today. Thanks for being with me on Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.